Welcome to the Meditation Conversation, the podcast to support your spiritual revolution. I'm your host, Kara Goodwin, and this is a really special discussion with a really amazing guest, Alexander Inchbald. We go deep into the mystical waters in this episode. Alexander shares fascinating encounters with the divine in the creation of his art, and we also cover some fascinating philosophical ground and apply that directly to our practical physical reality. Alexander Inchbald is a climate activist and the visionary behind the hashtag Masterpiece movement. He's on a profound journey to inspire creation in sync with Mother Nature. His experiences painting in some of the world's most breathtaking locales have led him to a revelation. We're not mere spectators in an incontrollable universe, but active architects of our own destinies. And this is such a rich discussion, not only in the content of the words, but in the beautiful creative energy that flows through the episode. It was really an honor to be a part of this, and I hope you get as much out of it as I did. I do recommend watching this one as a video if you can, rather than just listening to the audio, as there are some key visual aspects to the episode. And you can get to the video on themeditationconversation.com. So we'll get started after I quickly mention something I'm really excited about. You know I love homeopathy, and I'm particularly fond of the Best Made homeopathic remedies. Well, I just discovered that Best Made has a homeopathic pet division called Healthy Animals Forever. Through episode 291 with Lisa Tolley, I learned so much about homeopathy for animals, and I'm so excited now to have found Healthy Animals Forever as a trusted source for my pet's health. I'm really excited to have found this treasure trove of remedies to gently and naturally bring my pets into holistic wellness. So use the link in the show notes to try Healthy Animals Forever for yourself, and use code KARAG10 for 10% off. That's K-A-R-A-G 10 for 10% off. And likewise, you can use that code KARAG10 to get 10% off at Best Made Homeopathic Remedy for the people in your life too. And now enjoy this episode. So welcome, Alexander. I'm so excited that you're here today.
Kara, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So I can't wait to dive into your journey. Can you talk to us a bit about your journey and how you came to be a climate artist, and maybe a little bit also about what a climate artist even is?
Look, it's a beautiful sunny day here. You might be able to see the sun moving across my face. I'm looking out that way, right? And I can see the Alps. So I'm sitting here in Switzerland, and there's a little bit of snow. It's actually on the French Alps. So the French border is right there. And there's Lake Geneva in front of me. And then this way is more Switzerland. And behind me is Switzerland. So I'm above a city called Montreux, which is at one end of Lake Geneva. And over there is Verbier. Some people may know that ski resort. Just over the mountains is a ski resort called Chamonix. Mont Blanc is there. Mm. And in between...
I've been to Chamonix.
Ah! Okay, in between are the Alps. So I moved here 20 years ago, and I moved here because I was living in the UK, and we don't have mountains in the UK. Now, if you're listening to this in the UK, I know we have Snowdon in Wales, and I know there are a few mountains in Scotland, but let's be honest, they're not on the same magnitude and breadth as the Alps.
Thank you for saying that, because I have talked to my in-laws about that, and they're like, we're going to go to the mountains. And I'm like, you don't have mountains. I'm like, have you seen a mountain? Do you know what they look like? These are hills.
They're beautiful hills. Let's be clear. You know,
yes,
the UK has beautiful hills. They're beautiful hills. You know, the rolling hills of England, beautiful green. But let's be honest, mountains are mountains. And there's something about mountains that called me. So I moved here 20 years ago. I was 29 and a half. So for those of you who follow astrology.
Right. Saturn's return.
Right. Returning to the same point in the birth chart, 29 and a half. And I move. I leave the UK. I was working in advertising at the time. And I moved here to take up a role running a communications agency, actually in a tech company. And at that point, I had stopped painting for about 14 years. And the reason I stopped was very simple. And it's an archetypical story. So it's not about me. It's about the story that this reveals in all of us. At the age of 16, my dad came to me and he said, I've seen your latest painting. I think it's great, but I've just spoken to your art teacher and your mother, and we've all come to the conclusion that you're not good enough to make enough money as a professional artist. And my dream at that point was to go to St. Martin's in the Field, which is the number one fine art college in London. And my hopes were dashed. It was the same year that, you know, Dead Poet Society with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
When the kids all stand on the school desk and say, "Captain, my captain." And it's all about the artist, and it's all about this young boy in his class who sadly, maybe I shouldn't give the whole plot away in case you haven't seen it. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it. But it's all about the artist inside. It's all about the artist, and it's all about belief. And having seen the film, I didn't stand up to my dad and say, "You know what? I'm an artist. That's who I am. Doesn't matter what you say. I'll do it with or without you. Doesn't matter. I'm an artist." I didn't have the courage to do that. And part of that was nothing to do with my dad at all. It's just the ecosystem in which I found myself in the UK was not supportive of that. We're a very intellectual culture. We're smart, we're intelligent, we make great strategies, but not necessarily great creatives. Those who are creative, you know, the Beatles, they're reactionary. So we react to that. But pure creativity, I know there are going to be a few people who are going to criticize me for that, but we're great creative. We're great strategists. We're great thinkers. We're head people. And so I suppressed my creativity. I stopped painting for 14 years. And 14 years later, I moved to the Alps. Why? Because I was just drawn by the mountain.
You were drawn to the, I love it. I love it. Just keep the puns coming.
So I was drawn to the mountains, and I thought I wanted to ski here. I had skied from the age of 12. Actually, I started skiing at a little ski resort about an hour's drive from here. And I went up close to the other day and was painting up there. And I lived on top of a mountain, a place called the Slève, just outside Geneva for the first 18 months. And on my 30th birthday, I remember I was sitting in this hotel room with a friend, and I turned to him and I said, "You know what, I'm going to start painting again." And I was just filled with all this energy. And 6 months later, I picked up a paintbrush and I painted my first painting. And I'd missed it. I'd missed painting. And in between, I'd gone really to the bottom of the ocean. I'd gone as low as it's possible to go. I'd stopped eating properly at university. I'd gone to study business. I'd started drinking in order to relax myself so I could eat properly. And I thought, what's the point of life? Really, I got to that low. And then I got a job immediately afterwards working in marketing. And I thought this is what I wanted to do with my life. And after 2 years of this very prestigious marketing training scheme, head of HR called me and said, "We need to have a conversation." I said, "Okay, great. You can offer me a new job, a different placement." He said, "No, I've looked at your appraisal and we don't think you're good enough, so we're going to have to let you go." I said, "What do you mean I'm not good enough?" She said, "Look at your appraisal. Like, your lowest score is on creativity. You're not creative enough to be in this company." So a man at 26, not creative enough to be in an uncreative company, and a boy of 16 who wanted to be an artist. And really, that story for me is the story of so many of us, that we suppress that aspect of ourselves. We suppress who we are. 4 months later, I'd been on my first personal development program, and actually the same company invited me back and said, "Come and do something more interesting, we'll pay you 50% more." So I saw the power of personal development. I saw what could happen when you really unlock the potential inside you. And then I moved here and started to paint. And first of all, painted in a studio, which I designed and built. And then started to paint more and more outside, just guided, just drawn to the mountains to paint outside. And then what started to happen is I started to end up painting in more and more turbulent weather. And I was curious why that was happening. And I started to have these mystical experiences, which initially I couldn't explain. And you can't actually explain without a fair dose of. You can explain a little bit with psychology and neurology, a little bit with metaphysics, a little bit with epigenetics, but actually you need a little bit of wisdom cultures, other belief systems to complete the picture, complete the puzzle. And
a healthy dose of open-mindedness in the receiver, I think, too, who's willing to like, okay, I'm going to play with this. And
yeah.
Yeah. In order to be able to communicate it, right?
Actually, to begin with, I wasn't open-minded enough. That was the journey. So if I go back, I'll take you to Provence. So imagine Provence, summer, right? So Alps winter, painted in the Alps, we can come back to that. I'm going to take you to Provence, and there's a field of lavender in front of you. If you can imagine this, like rows of lavender, and the bees are buzzing around, and the tree is in the middle of this beautiful field of lavender, and you're at an altitude of about, I'd say maybe 5,000 feet. And right behind you is Mont Ventoux, which is the big mountain in the middle of Provence where they cycle up on the Tour de France. And it looks like there's snow on top. It's not. It's just geologically, that's the way it is. And the wind is blowing, the Mistral, like this really strong wind is blowing. And it's blowing about 50, 60 miles an hour. And the canvas, if you can imagine, I've got the canvas here and I'm taking my paintbrush to the canvas, except I'm not. The canvas is moving so strongly that it's hitting the brush.
Oh, interesting.
So I have no control. So we all know what it's like to be out of control. Like, you know what it's like. Like, sometimes things happen and you're out of control. If it keeps on happening and you don't intend it to happen, it can trigger you. So there am I in front of this beautiful landscape. You know, I've traveled all this way down to this area in order to create this painting. And it's a beautiful day and the wind is blowing and this is happening. And the canvas is hitting the brush and I have no control. So after a while of this, I just lose it, just absolutely lose it. And I start shouting at the wind.
Why are you doing?
Imagine this dumb Brit literally standing, right? So after 3 hours of this, getting more and more irritated, I give up, abandon ship, take the painting, traipse off like some angry artist and abandon for the day. Painting, wind's ruined it. Following day, I get up, I hide from the wind, I paint this painting, it's okay. I go to lunch and I get back into my car after lunch and I'm like, okay, I'm ready, I'll drive back to Geneva. And there's a queue. My GPS says there's like a 4-hour queue on the auto. So I'm like, okay, I'm not taking that, flip deviation. And I go immediately back past where I painted the previous day. So maybe this is a sign. You know, sometimes when you get those signs, you're like synchronicity, and maybe this is a sign. So I pull in and I get this message to get out. I get out and I get the message to put up the canvas again. So I put up the canvas and I get the message to sit down and meditate. So I always meditate before I paint. Because you need to connect to the nature, you need to connect to the lavender, to the mountain, whatever. When I get this message to paint, so I stand up, and this time, rather than take a paintbrush, I grab, you know, one of those organic sponges you get in the ocean? You know what that?
Yeah.
And I grab it, and I put paint on the palette, like lots of different colors, and I dab this sponge into all these different colors. And this time, I put the palette down, and the canvas is still doing this, it's still vibrating the wind. And I grab the side of the canvas and I just feel like the wind is flowing through me and I follow the wind.
Ooh.
And in 10 minutes, the whole painting transforms and it becomes the best painting I've ever painted. Now, it took me many years to work out what had happened, but I'll give you the short version. And it's inspired by a quote by Carl Jung. So Carl Jung said, "What we resist persists and grows." And Eckhart Tolle said, "Whatever we resist in another is also in us." Well, both of them really we interpreted as in other humans. So whatever we resist in another is also in us. Whatever we resist persists and grows. But actually it works with nature too. So when you resist the wind resists you. When you stop resisting the wind doesn't just stop resisting you, it appears to partner with you. For a period of time, we think we get into a state of flow, but actually we are a state of flow. And the only thing that takes us out of that state of flow is our resistance to the wind, to another person, to our government, to the system, to big business, whatever it is, to our partner, to our parents. But actually, when we stop resisting it, it stops resisting us. And in that moment, we see we are in flow, and that is our natural state. And what I started to observe, the more I painted in blizzards and gale force winds, and at the top of mountains, and when mountains disappeared, is that we are not passive recipients of a world beyond our control. We are active creators of the canvas. And it all depends on our frequency. So we can act as a victim and everything happens to us. We can act with our mind and we think, we delude ourselves into creating, into thinking we have choice. And we can transcend all of that and connect to who we truly are. And then we are it and we're shaping it all the time.
Wow, that's profound. I love the wisdom that came through in that experience. And there was something as you were talking about that that made me wonder, this is a little bit different, but while you're in these landscapes, you know, you're a part of what you're painting.
Yeah.
You're taking this profound multidimensional experience that you're having because you're in these profoundly beautiful and natural settings with great energy. I mean, just talking about the wind, it's like how much energy was actually moving through for the wind to be that strong. So you're taking that and like stamping it into 2D, right? Like you're translating it into the second dimension.
Yeah.
And do you get the sense that you're taking that energy and moving that into the painting, into the second dimension? Do you feel that it's another creative force that's being birthed? Does it feel like both? Does this question even make sense?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll take you to a blizzard. Okay, so now you're in France again, not far from Geneva, and it's March. These were the days when it really snowed low at March. So it was about 8-9 years ago, probably. And I went out with a friend and he was going to video me. And there was snow on the ground, but there wasn't that much snow. And we set up and there was this beautiful avenue of trees. And I was just really drawn by this avenue of trees, like this perfect avenue. You know, in France, like they build these avenues, like they grow the trees on either side of the road. And I was just drawn by this path, like going into the distance. And I thought, I'm going to paint this. So we set up, start painting. And as we start to paint, the first flakes of snow start to land on the canvas. And I'm like, oh, here we go again. And the paint starts to run. It's no longer this lack of control. It's that the paint is literally running off the canvas. I'm like, okay. So, and then the snow gets a bit heavier. So I'm trying to still my mind. And at a certain point, I just let go. And I start to observe that the paint and the snow are mixing on the canvas and they're creating these really interesting patterns. I'm like, wow, look at, who's doing this? Now, is it the paint? Is it the snow? It's not me, well, not the ego me. There's something greater that is creating with me as me. Now, words don't properly describe it. So, you know, some people would say through me, I'd say no. Actually, because you're an aspect of it, but the words don't describe it. What I'm really trying to get to here is the energy. And maybe you can feel this in your body, because this is it, right? This is it. This is the Shakti. This is the Kundalini. This is the Chi moving through our body right now. This is what's creating. And it is us and we are it. That's what's creating. It's not something separate from us. We are it and it is creating. And it's magical. It's really magical. It's like, in that moment, and you observe and you feel, and there are chills running through you, like you get goosebumps, you get chills running up and down your spine. Anyway, we were in this state for a couple of hours, painting probably for 4.5-5 hours. And then at a certain point, the snow stops, and I finish the painting. And I turn to my friend, Tony, who's videoing me, Tony Johnson. And I say, Tony, it's done. And he goes, I don't think it is. I think it's another 15 minutes. So I paint for another 15 minutes. And he was right. Like I looked at it, I was like, yeah, you're right. You're like, it's not quite finished. So I painted for another 15 minutes. All was done. And at that moment, that exact moment, she was standing back, he's videoing it and saying that, the sun comes out. It melts the ice, which is holding the snow, the paint to the canvas. And the paint runs off. I'm not talking just some of it. All of it runs off the canvas. So I started with a blank canvas. Ended with a blank canvas, pretty much. I mean, just this paint ran off. And all I have is the story. But the story is the story of really how creation happens. Creation isn't something that we impose on something. Creation, true creation, is something that is happening in harmony with everything. So when we believe that we're impacting something, that's the mind wanting to impact. But when we were in harmony with Mother Nature, it doesn't matter what we do, it will create positive vibes. And herein lies, by the way, the secret to climate change. We think we have to do something in order for the climate to change. What if we would just acted in harmony with the climate? It doesn't necessarily mean you have to pull CO2 out of the atmosphere or plant more trees. In fact, if you plant more trees and pull CO2 of that out of the atmosphere and you do that from a state of fear, it's going to create more adverse ripples than actually doing nothing. If you do that same action and it is fully in harmony, then it will accelerate it. But you could also jump on a plane as long as it's the intention, the purity of the intention is in harmony with Mother Nature. If it's really that you're called to go to that retreat or go to that event, you're going to have as much impact by doing that or putting a brushstroke on a canvas or doing something you love as attempting to pull CO2 out of the atmosphere.
I love that. Well, and I think you've beautifully, if we come back to what even is a climate artist, I definitely get the sense of it now. You're not just, as you say, kind of imposing this creative process onto the canvas, but it's this whole, like the whole atmosphere is a part of the creation.
Yes.
Including potentially its destruction. It might be a very quick cycle.
Yes. You've absolutely nailed it. So every aspect is creating all the time. And all we become is the channel for that. So we often think, oh, I created it. No, you didn't. Your ego thinks it created it. Your mind thinks it created it, depending on your definition of that. But actually, you can even begin to explain the influences you've had that led you to create in that moment. You could talk about your teachers. You could talk about your parents. You could talk about your siblings. You could talk about your children, you could talk about your mentors, but actually, if you just go back through your lineage, you'd have to go back your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, but it wouldn't just be them because they've all been influenced by other people and you've been influenced by other people and we've all been influenced by other people. So every single piece that is created, just if you look at it on a human dimension, is influenced by all of us. And we say Vincent van Gogh created that painting and Michelangelo created that painting. Yes, they channeled it. They were the ones who were holding the brush or the painting knife or the pen or whatever it was. And then you look at Mother Nature and the influence of Mother Nature, a whole other dimension, the influence of the universe. So every single piece is created by everything.
It's a whole big, everything is conspiring, like wants in on it if you allow it to.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I love it.
You got it. You nailed it.
Wow.
So the idea of, we talk a lot about co-creation. Co-creation for me is massively misunderstood. We perceive that we are co-creating with another person, and that leads to all sorts of confusion. You know, I'm co-creating my marriage, I'm co-creating this business, I'm co-creating this idea. But actually, really what's happening is the source energy is flowing through each of us at specific moments in time, and we are each sourcing an aspect of it. Now, when we appreciate that that's what co-creation is, we are actually in communion with all. Not just in communion with the Mother Nature, we're in communion with everything. And we just become a channel, a conduit, the canalisation in French, so the canal, the channel through which that creativity is brought into form.
What I love too about what you're saying is this, like, it's happening now. It's this immediate, like, summoning is the word that's coming, but it's not even, it's this allowance.
Yeah.
But it also is this kind of reclamation of each moment of, I am allowing this again, not like, oh, I achieved this state. So like you had that experience with the blizzard and the canvas and, you know, it was there and you created it and then it was gone and you had that whole cycle. And so we could be tempted to be like, oh, now I do that.
Yeah.
You know, now I've opened myself up to it and it's just there and it's maybe to an extent, but it's also this continuous renewal and choice to keep doing that has been my experience, where it's like this today again, I open myself up. I choose again to be that divine channel, to be that, to let that come through me. It's my choice and I want that, and not taking it like, well, I did that once, so that's just going to carry me through. It's this is what the present moment is offering, and I open myself up to it.
Yes. It's in each moment, you and I are consciously or unconsciously influencing it. And there are many different views on this from many amazing writers and thinkers. And we often talk about choice. You even use the word. Now, it is the mind that perceives there is a choice. So as Richard Rudd, the author of The Gene Keys, told me once, he said, when we're operating from the shadow, in other words, we're acting from a victim state, it's happening to us. We perceive we have no choice. The government does this. I have to pay my taxes. I was taught that. My boss told me. I am. It is happening to me. I have no choice. When we operate from the mind, what he calls the gift frequency, the mind perceives it has a choice. I could do this or I could do this. When we operate from our highest frequency, which, by the way, is our natural state, you know, we perceive we have to get to that, but actually it is the mind that takes us out of that state. When we operate from that frequency, there is no choice.
But would you say we have the choice to get into that state to an extent? Because I think that people can take it for granted that, oh, this happened to me once, or I'm doing the practices, so I am, you know, but then we can kind of get this egoic, like, almost laziness, I guess, of just like, okay, whatever comes out is divinity. But we're actually not keeping that alignment, which I think we do foundationally keep choosing at some level.
Yes. In the sense that you're talking about it, kind of. But again, like co-creation, the word can be massively misunderstood. And the key component here is the misunderstanding of the power of the mind. So if we come to this model here, right, this infinite loop we have here, and over here we have, okay, it's just a model, okay? And as with all models, it tells a story. So I'll just very briefly tell the story. 200,000 years ago, when humankind was born in the Great Rift in Africa, we were connected to all of it. We weren't disconnected. We were as aware as a tree in the forest or as aware as a leopard on the savannah. In other words, we had no conscious awareness that we existed. It was only as we went on this journey, 40,000 years ago, the prefrontal cortex is created, gives us conscious awareness. The larynx is created, gives us a voice. Now we can communicate that we are aware. I am, I exist. And we continue on this journey 10,000 years ago. We settle down in the first villages, we create crops that allows us to store seed for the first time. That leads to hoarding, but it also leads us to put ourselves very slightly above nature. I am now in control.
The master.
I am the master. I can cultivate. I can domesticate animals. I'm in charge. Civilization 5,000 years ago, we create money, time, first clocks, first marriage. Which, by the way, was not about love. It was about man controlling, being able to control who was giving birth to his child. And we create the first power structures, ziggurats and temples, and a few get more than the rest. Oh, and the first slavery. All right, so that's 5,000 years ago. And then every civilization since moves us this way. So we move from being part of all of it to the pinnacle, which is the industrial world. And that is all about us being a cog in the wheel. So from all of it to being a cog in the machine, right? And then some of us have gone back this way. So this is what we call the pathway of separation. And you can also see this, by the way, in a lifetime. So we're born, we're connected to all of it. Delta brainwaves shift at the age of 2 into theta brainwaves, shift at the age of 7 into alpha brainwaves. At the age of 12, we shift into beta brainwave, state of doing, and then we become an adult. So childhood, teenager, adult. This is the power of the mind. This is where big business was created. This is where wealth was created. This is where all the systems that we see today were created. And this is where all the money sits. This is a dam here. And this is where all the money sits. And this is where all the love sits. And some of us have jumped across the dam and we're operating down here. But what happens, what I observe, is that we face resistance down here. So we're trying to reach the top of our mountain, forgetting that actually we're already at the top of our mountain. There's an aspect of us already there. And it's only the parts of ourselves that we have separated from along this journey that are left not at the top of the mountain. So you mentioned reclaiming, you mentioned choice. We can reclaim those aspects, but we can't do it by forcing it this way. We actually have to back up. We have to go back into our adulthood. We have to unravel the things that happened here. We have to go back into our teenage years, unravel the things here. We have to go back into our childhood and unravel the things here. Now you say, is there a choice? There appears to be a choice. The mind perceives there's a choice. The mind goes, yeah, there's a choice. I have a choice to come on this podcast today. I have a choice to listen to this podcast. I have a choice to meditate today. I have a choice to paint or to run a retreat or whatever it is. I have a choice. But actually, that's an illusion. It's an illusion that we have a choice. The choice is to separate or to stay in connection. Mm-hmm. And to stay in connection is actually not a choice at the highest frequency. It just is. That is our natural state. So the mind is choosing to not be in separation. Is that a choice? I guess to the mind, it's a choice. But to the essence, it's no. What are you doing? That's dumb. That is out of harmony with your true nature. That's out of harmony with Mother Nature. That's just, you call it a choice. The mind calls it a choice, but it's ridiculous.
It's like, yeah. I love it. I mean, it's so philosophical, right? You know, I mean, and it's almost like a geometry that keeps building out and then eventually folds back in on itself.
Yeah.
Because you can keep kind of going out, like, because you could think of it as will as well, right? Like, is it my own will? Is it a divine will? Is it a bigger will? And it's a yes and a no. It's like, we do have this human experience, which ultimately, I would argue, part of it is that free will. It's what are we going to do? What are we going to be aligned or are we not? And that is within our range of experience. It's accessible. We have access to either being aligned or not being aligned and both. But it always, like the way that you're talking about it, it's like you keep branching out, because ultimately we all go back to one thing and there isn't a choice. It's just who is what we are. It's who we are. And then it folds back in on itself because then you come back to this individual expression and you're kind of back to where you started, right?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
There's a wonderful quote it comes from a meditation on the Venus sequence of the gene keys. And it's one of Richard's partners who says, you're going on a journey from home to home. That is the infinite journey. And what you don't realize is that actually what you need to do is reverse back up and unravel it. But once you've unraveled it and you go this way, there's no resistance to creating a masterpiece, right? So this is how you come back and you create the masterpiece. Then you use the mind. See, what most of us have done is in the process of trying to get here, we've rejected this. But actually you need the mind in order to place the brushstroke on the canvas. No mind, you can't do it. So the mind, or the intellect, as Albert Einstein says, becomes the servant of the gift. The gift is this.
And so often we have it the other way around.
So once you come this way and you use the mind, nothing wrong with the mind. No mind, you can't place yourself in time and space. But you're now using it intentionally to be fully aligned and bring everything into the world that you are being called to bring into the world. There is then no choice. It's like, I come from here, there is no choice. That's what I'm being called to do. Okay, I use the mind to do that.
Yeah.
I place the brushstroke on the canvas. I go back, resource myself, I place the next brush stroke on the canvas and I keep going.
It's amazing. There's so many places. I want to go this way and that way and that way and that way. But one of the things I love so much about what you're saying is the embracing of the human aspect of ourselves, because we can go on a philosophical journey of, and that oneness and that we are spirit, and get so far into it that we negate the importance of the human opportunity that we have. As we come more and more into this understanding of this divinity that flows through us, we recognize that we have this incredible opportunity here in these bodies. And it's in that alignment with the divinity and with the oneness, with the nature, with all of that, that we actually can actualize that. And if we get so caught up in that, yeah, but it's all one and I'm all one, and it's like we can run the risk of not actually doing anything, which is okay for some people, but there are also change makers who came here to use the vehicle of the body and the life experience to affect change, to create this different experience here on the planet. And I love, like, this is so, like, that infinity loop, or whatever you want to call it, is the encompassment of that masterpiece of the brilliance of the human life.
You absolutely nailed it, Kara. Absolutely. That to me is really where humankind is right now. Look, everyone listening and watching this episode, all of your listeners, you've done immense work. You've been meditating for years, probably, if you're listening to this show. You've done decades of work. And it takes weeks to get to base camp of Everest, 2 weeks to get there. But it takes months of training, buying the right equipment, learning the techniques in order to be able to climb your mountain. That's the inner game work. But if you only stay on the inner game, you end up in what I call a woo-woo mountain. And woo-woo mountain is where we just get lost. We're lost in the clouds. We don't know where we're going. And we don't know whether we go this way or this way. And anything can distract us. Oh, look at this. Oh, look at this. Shiny new thing syndrome. Nothing wrong with it. You can spend decades going around here. But most of us, we've spent time in monasteries, maybe not in this lifetime, but we've spent time, we've done that. We've done that journey. Changemakers are not called to go back into a monastery and sit in the clouds on top of a mountain. They're called to bring what they are called to bring into the world. And that requires us to reintegrate the masculine. And that is the hardest task, because the masculine looks like it's destroying the planet, but actually the masculine is part of us. If we're connected to all of it, Rumi, you know, drop in the ocean, you're the entire ocean and drop. If we are all of it, not we connect to all of it, but we are all of it, that includes the masculine. So how do we then use that as a force to bring our essence, what we've been called to bring into the world? We'd have to stop resisting it. Huh? What you mean we'd have to stop resisting all those people we don't like? Yes. What does that mean? We'd have to reclaim those aspects to ourselves. What you mean? All the horrible stuff going on in the world? Yes. My wife is Ukrainian. My children are half Ukrainian. My mother-in-law has lived with us now for 10 years, ever since pro-Russian forces invaded Donetsk in eastern Ukraine, where she was living. She was held for 10 days illegally underground. And the only reason they didn't kill her is because they didn't have enough time. They were called to the front line. We had the Red Cross looking for her. Her husband never recovered fully, died in 2018. And to be a refugee, we don't understand what it means. It's not losing your home. It's not losing your family. It's not losing your possessions. It's losing the thing which defines who you perceive you are, your identity. That's what it is. And you'd have to reclaim the resistance to all of that, to war, to brutality, to abuse. And most of us aren't ready to do that. But if you're not ready to do that, then you aren't connecting to all of it. And if you're not connecting to all of it, then you're not bringing to life what you're being called to bring to life. You're in resistance to it. And if you're resistance to it, your canvas is going to be doing that. And you won't understand why the money's not flowing, why the creativity's not flowing, why the clients aren't flowing, why all of these things aren't flowing. Look at me, isn't it strange, right? I'm sitting here and the sun has just steadily gone like this. Up my body, right? You can see this. Maybe some of your listeners can't because it's just on audio. but the sun is literally moving up my body. It's on my nose right now. And at the beginning of the show, wasn't there?
Little speck.
Yeah. So what's happening is the light, the climate is responding to the conversation. That's what it does.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And what I love too with what you're saying is that you're putting that in the collective framework. So it's that reclamation within us of the things happening within the collective, which is so valid. And there's, because you've oscillated as you've taken us through that infinity between the collective and humanity and the individual. Because what I was thinking when you started talking about that reclamation and how we have to come to acceptance was within us, the wounded parts of us that we so often don't want to look at in our own personal history and our own story, and the importance of, when we're ready, being able to integrate those, which means courageously integrating those and accepting things that are really, really difficult in our personal history. It's an and. It's yes, as we go and mature along our path, we have to integrate all of that and be out of resistance of all of the things that we don't want to look at and don't want to accept. And so it's amazing.
Absolutely. As Carl Jung and Richard Rudd both put it, and Peter Koenig, who's my partner, who developed a tool called reclamation work, literally a simplified way of reclaiming the aspects of ourselves that we have rejected. And we integrate his work, all of that work actually, into the Masterpiece retreats we run. Really, that process is a process of becoming whole again, and then acting from that state of wholeness. And when we do that, that's where the miracle really happens. But the mistake that most of us make is we think that those aspects are personal to us. No, as Carl Jung pointed out, that in the collective, they are not ours. And we come in, this essence, soul, whatever you want to call it, comes into a physical form and literally dives into this sea of suffering, this sea of resistance, this sea of pain, but forgets that around it is an ocean of love. And when we actually embrace the resistance, the wind, the blizzard, the snow, whatever it is, it dissolves and all we're left with is love. But we have to go into the resistance in order to do that. Now, does that mean it's ours? No, it's our responsibility to transmute it, but it's not our, it's the collective. And we're just transmuting on behalf of the collective. That's our responsibility in this lifetime to transmute it, to reclaim it, and to turn it into light. And the more that happens, the faster the shift that we can all sense happens on the planet. But if we go after it to try and make it happen, won't happen. If we just focus on the next brushstroke, it happens automatically. And what emerges is a collective masterpiece created by humankind, which is really what we're seeing right now. It doesn't look like it because we still see the war in Ukraine and the war in the Middle East and the $3 trillion being invested in defense around the world and all the other budgets being cut. That's what we see on the surface. But beneath the surface, you and I are having this conversation. 5 years ago, would we have had this conversation? Maybe. 10 years ago? No. 20 years ago? Definitely not. 30 years ago, you're joking me. So in 30 years, we have shifted to this point. How fast is it going to go from here? Not by sitting on Woo Woo Mountain, by bringing into the world what we are called to bring into the world, by painting the next brushstroke on the canvas.
Well, that is so beautiful, Alexander. This has just been amazing. I've gotten so much from this conversation. I thank you so much. Can you tell people how they can find out more about your work?
Sure. Look, Kara, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it. And amazing conversation, amazing, amazing questions. And my wish is just that people feel the energy of this. And that to me is enough. If you want to find out a little bit more about me, you can go to my personal website, alexander-inchbold.com. And there you'll find pictures of me painting in the mountains. You'll find galleries, virtual galleries of my artwork. You'll find videos of me painting in the mountains. You can go into the galleries. There's 3D virtual galleries, and you can actually look at the individual canvases. And you can even download an app onto your phone from Google Store, App Store, and pick out your favorite painting and imagine it on your wall. Literally, it's got virtual reality and augmented reality. Yeah, augmented reality, and you can literally place it on your wall, which is cool. Imagine, you can imagine having the power of Mother Nature literally in your living room or in your favorite space. And my experience always has been that it has elevated the space. Well, if you take this canvas off, for instance, or you take the canvases out of this room, the energy of the room drops. Why? Because it's the power of Mother Nature. So that's one thing you can do. And you can also then go to the masterpiece.agency. So the Masterpiece Agency is where you'll find all of the retreats and pathways that we design. So we design personal pathways for people literally to tap back into this and to go on their journey. Actually, I should say the other way around. So to unravel this, to go backwards, unravel all of this and go back in here and then go this way. And we really look from the perspective of the outer. So what's happening with your clarity? How clear are you? What's your purpose? What's your mission? What are you being called to do? What's the summit of your mountain? And then we look at how to develop the content, which reflects the journey in your lifetime. So my journey, it's all about creativity, suppressing it, unlocking it. So I wrote a book around that and then develop these programs to help you do that. Your content could be a book, podcast, course, whatever it is, but it's always the antidote to what you've learned, your greatest karmic wound. Then we look at the communications. And as I mentioned, I spent 15 years in the world of communications. So we actually channel the communications, not at the frequency of the shadow, which is where the majority of marketing is, but the frequency of the summit of the mountain. And then finally, we look at cash flow to ensure that you have got money flowing through your system. And we design a regenerative business model to make that work. And that's the kind of idea behind all of the different journeys that we run. And then we just design the personal journey for you. So come along to a purpose session, work out your purpose. That's always the key, the route to your tree, your mountain. Or come along, we'll probably be having another Begin the Ascent workshop, which is basically designing how you get to the summit and what steps you need to take to do that. So you can find out more about that on the masterpiece.agency.
That's beautiful. What amazing work. Thank you so much for being here, Alexander. I have loved every second of this conversation. It has really, really been empowering and full and divine, and it's really been an honor. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'd love to ask you for one quick favor, and that's to share this episode with one person who you think will benefit from it. Let them know you're thinking about them by sharing this episode with them right now. Thank you, and I look forward to the next meditation conversation.